Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Sabah is home to the world's smallest subspecies of elephants, the Bornean pygmy elephant. But according to the Sabah Wildlife Department, there are no more than 1,000 to 1,500 Bornean elephants left in the territory. But a recent WWF paper had estimated a smaller Bornean elephant population, numbers that were substantially smaller than what was previously estimated in another published study conducted in 2008. So are elephants in Sabah suffering a population decline? And if so, what can be done to halt and reverse it? To mark World Wildlife Day on March 3rd, joining us on the show now, we have conservation biologist Dr. Nur Zafarina Uthman. She's a senior lecturer at University Malaysia Sabah. She is an expert on the Bornean pygmy elephant, which has been listed as an endangered species. She's also the founder of Project Seratu Atai, which is a collective in Sabah that aims to promote coexistence between elephants and humans through research and education. Dr. Farina, thank you for joining us on the show today. May I begin our conversation tonight by perhaps you telling us a little bit more about Project Seratu Atai, because it seems to me that you're doing kind of on the ground work and you're doing a lot of outreach with humans who come into contact with elephants. Maybe begin by telling us a little bit about the work that Project Seratu Atai does.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Melissa and Sharad, for having me. So Seratu Atai, actually, we started in 2018. So we are a very recent organization, actually, because we believe that is possible. We just need to build the capacity, also to build the confidence of people to shift their paradigm to accept this idea. Because for so long we have been trying to stop the elephant from going to the places that they need to go. I think it's time that we change that mindset, that we have to be able to share the landscape that which is limited and needed both by people and the wildlife, especially the elephants. And we believe that through methodologies, new kind of techniques, we will be able to create this coexistence. So that's why together with the board members of Seratu Atai, we slowly started to build different programs to try to achieve this.
Farina, can you tell us a little bit about the kind of human-elephant conflict that exists in Sabah? Has it, for instance, resulted in loss of life, or is it mostly the loss of crops? And are there traditional notions about how humans ought to interact with elephants, considering that I guess the Bornean pygmy elephant is indigenous to the island of Borneo, so there must be kind of cultural notions that you have to negotiate or think about when you're trying to get people to, as it were, reimagine their relationship.
Right. First of all, Sharad, if you don't mind, I would like to just mention this, that the Bornean elephants, they are not pygmy at all. They're not they are the smallest subspecies of Asian elephants, but they are not small. So a lot of people think that our Bornean elephants are, short, very, that's not, because our elephant could to 3 meters. They are like a elephant. But pygmy does give them a lot of publicity. But I would, Malaysian could just call them as a Bornean elephants. And regarding your question, so basically we know elephants, they require like a very vast area, right? And most of this area, they are actually very suitable also for agricultural activities and things like this. So there are a lot of, so that's why conflicts happen, Now elephants are restricted to a very limited ranging area, and they started to go now outside the protected area. And because of that, you know, we don't have anyone kill intentionally by elephants. We do have several people injured. You know, most of the time it's because both people and elephants are surprised when they see each other and both try to run. And usually people, when they run from elephants, they will slip, they will fall, they will fell down and things like this. That's why they got this wounded. And but luckily so far in Sabah, we don't really have you know, death cases of elephants intentionally go and charge people and want to kill people. Not like in India. In India, you can have 300 you know, death cases every year. So that's why we need to keep this situation. We don't want to alter the elephant's behavior by showing as if we are their enemy. That's why from now, when we're trying to control, do mitigation methods, do elephant control, we need to consider the behavior and the ecology of the elephant so that we don't alter this behavior. Right now, they are still kind of scared when they see people. Usually, the elephant is the one who will, you know, retreat away, especially the female elephants. The male, they can be a little bit adventurous, naughty, you know, because again, it's part of their ecological need. They need to eat more, you know, to maintain their body size, their body condition, so that they can reproduce and stuff like this. That's why they are, you know, prefer to take a risk. And that's why when you see a lot of conflict cases, it's usually involved the male elephants rather than the female. So there are a lot of, it's very complex, a lot of factors why conflicts happen. But we still have the opportunity to make sure that there will be no death cases like what happened in other Asian elephant population.
I love that you brought out understanding the behavior of elephants, because, you know, I think in kind of dealing with human-elephant conflict, the way is to understand how elephants tend to behave, and that can help us predict and minimize some of the impact of that conflict. I'm just wondering then, how do we do that? Do we have an understanding of not just the behavior, but you talked about how maybe male bulls are slightly more aggressive or more adventurous or risk takers. Do we have an understanding, an adequate understanding of the Bornean elephant population in terms of the kind of sex ratio, the age, you know, demographic of elephants? Do we understand that? Is that data being collected?
Right. So to be honest, it's very, very hard to really take demographic data, because Asian elephants in general, including the Bornean elephants, they live in a forest. So the visibility will not allow us to, you know, follow them all day long, like the savannah African elephant or the elephant in Sri Lanka that live in an open grassland, you know. So it's very hard to do this. But obviously, we try in Kinabatangan, where I work, in Sandakan, in Sabah. Usually what we're trying to do when the elephants are spending time along the riverbank, this is the best opportunity to go and, you know, like try to understand, to get the data for this. So we do have, but it's not like a long term, and it requires a lot of funding to maintain a team that could follow this elephant for several years. But obviously there are a lot of ways that, you know, collaboration with tourism, you know, tourism industry, for example, because they always go and take pictures and stuff like this. So, you know, we can always create collaboration. But I could say that we try to collect this kind of data, but it's not easy.
Farina, we're talking about Sabah and specifically, but because Borneo consists of, you know, Kalimantan, and Kalimantan is huge, and Sarawak, and of course Brunei as well. Do these elephants, are they well distributed across the island of Borneo? And is there collaboration with scientists in Kalimantan, in Indonesia, and also in the territory of Sarawak? And I don't know if Brunei has them, but yes.
Another interesting thing about the Bornean elephants, you don't find any Bornean elephants in Sarawak and Brunei.
Oh.
So, and even in Sabah, they only live in the east coast of Sabah, not west coast. So you can find, you will see elephants in the zoo, in Lokkawi Zoo, but not in, like wild elephants. So Lahad Datu, Sandakan, Tawau, central like Tongok. So these are the only distribution area of the elephants. So there are three, and then they move a little bit into Kalimantan. But the population there is not big. It's about 100 elephants only, and we think that they, because of again there are a lot of human activities along the border between North Kalimantan and Sabah, so the elephants are kind of settled down there in North Kalimantan. So yeah, so it's that's why. First of all, the number is very, very, very low. I mean, like, the number of the elephants are not as big as if they are still viable. And then their ranging distribution is very limited to this area. So that's why, we have more pressure now to think about how do we connect, like population to another population. And like my organization, we don't really work with Kalimantan yet, but organization like WWF, I know that they are building this relationship with their partners in Kalimantan.
Well, I did not know that. Thank you for educating us tonight. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, Farina, and let's come back and discuss so many more things to discuss, including the Sabah State Elephant Action Plan and how that is going to help conserve this elephant species. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with more on Consider This. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sherrod Kutin. Let's continue our conversation with conservation biologist Dr. Nur Zafarina Uthman about the Bornean elephant population in Sabah. Let's talk about your organization, Seratu Atai, Farina. I understand that it does a lot of work in learning how to build elephant-friendly landscapes, especially outside protected areas, because we know elephants can sometimes roam outside these protected areas. But why is it important to manage elephants within at the landscape level?
Right. So one of our main project right now is that we're trying to implement this state Bornean Elephant Action Plan 2020 to 2029 at the Kinabatangan landscape. Because before this, we always speak to each of the we have so many stakeholders, right? And elephants, they are ranging area again, like it's across different stakeholders. So you have those people in the oil palm industry, you have local communities, you have the tourism industry that needs the elephants. So there are a lot different people have different visions, and different people have different ways how they do mitigation. But again, and we don't really speak to each other, but we live as a like a big neighborhood, and elephants will just go from one area to another area. So if we don't do if we don't work together at the landscape level, we will never be able to achieve this coexistence, and it will be a loss for everyone that need the elephants directly or indirectly. So for example, I give you an example. If the elephants are outside the protected areas, just like what you said just now, Melissa, it's like a ping pong game. So one person or one stakeholder will push the elephants to another stakeholder, another stakeholder will push to another stakeholder. So at the end, the elephants will get confused, and then they will create more damages, they will create more conflicts. And then the government, the NGOs, the scientists, academias, we all have to go to each of these stakeholder and advise them. So it takes a lot of time. So now, if we could create a shared vision, among all those stakeholders, how we can achieve like a win-win situation for everyone. So hopefully it will give like a, you know, good opportunity.
So Fanny, that's very interesting. You're talking about bringing all the stakeholders in this conversation, but I imagine that actually one of the biggest stakeholders, and I mean literally, are the elephants, but they're also voiceless. What can we tell, you know, about how to think about elephant interests and welfare, if it were? I mean, you spoke earlier about something very interesting. You said when elephants encounter human beings, they run, that human beings run and so do elephants. And I thought it was really interesting because, correct me if I'm wrong, but elephants don't have predators. I mean, they're the kind of the largest in the ecosystem, right? So is running away from human beings a learned, you know, behavior? I mean, we know elephants are hugely intelligent animals. How do we sort of discern and have a conversation, as it were, with elephants?
All right. So obviously, okay, just to share with you my experience. I mean, obviously, I'm not an elephant whisperer or whatever, right? but at some point, I was on a tree. That's the best way to observe the elephants because we don't want to disturb them and we want them to feel relaxed, you know. So usually, we will just go on a tree and watch them. And then suddenly, I was watching, observing a female group, right? A female herd. And then suddenly, we didn't expect at all that suddenly a bull came out. And he went straight away under my tree. It wasn't very high. And, you know, and at that time, I just say, you know, like I was trying to tell myself, okay, be calm. So I try to like you know, like practice my breathing and just keep saying in my heart that I'm just here to, you know, learn about you so that I could help you. And then about 10 minutes he was there not doing anything, just putting his trunk on his mouth, you know, and then he went away. In front of me there was this ficus tree, and suddenly he just stretched his trunk and then he picked the fruit, the fig fruit, and eat. As if he's trying to tell me, if I want to reach you, so that's easy, you know. So for me, obviously you cannot speak, but you can show respect. For example, the distance, right? So if you can respect the distance, I mean, elephant will show you signs if they are comfortable, if they are agitated, if they are vigilant, or they just want to check on you and things like that. So we have to learn the signal from the elephants. I mean, at least that's what me and my team have been doing for the last 10 years, you know, and that this is what we're trying to promote, that we have to respect the elephants, at least the Bornean elephant. I'm not saying the whole Asian elephants, yeah? This is that the Bornean elephants, at least also the one that live in Kinabatangan, they will show you enough signs before they come and charge you or whatever. And so once you understand this, then you will be able to avoid accidents and, you know, like conflicts and things like this.
Can I ask you about awareness about elephants in general and Bornean elephants in particular, particularly for people in Semenanjung Malaysia, people in Malaya who for many of us, you know, Bornean elephants feel we have never had an encounter or even seen a Bornean elephant in flesh. So what is it that you maybe for in terms of education that we need to learn a bit more about the role of a Bornean elephant in the ecosystem, particularly within the territory of Sabah?
So I think the elephants, the Bornean elephants, because they range in such a very big area. So for me, they are like an umbrella species, right? If we get to keep more natural area habitats for the elephants, we will be able to also help to conserve other small you know, species, like in one of the forest reserve in Sabah, for example, the Tawai Forest Reserve. It's elephants are, you know, there are a lot of like hot spots of elephants roaming in this area. And when we install the camera traps, we also found a lot of endemic species of Sabah that live in the same area. So when you use elephants as the species that we need to conserve, actually, you know, because they are very charismatic species, so you actually get to save other animals, smaller as animal species, and also the habitats. You know, like for example, Tawai really provide, you know, like a water catchment for the local communities over there. So I think that's the most important role of the Burnian elephants.
When we talk about, some of the most difficult things that when it comes to animal conservation or forest conservation, is really who's threatening these areas, yeah. Right? And development is a broad thing. We talk about development or pressures on land, so on and so forth, right? These are things. So for the elephant, what are the main challenges, as it were, what are the main threats to their environment?
Right. Okay. So at least for Sabah, obviously I cannot speak for all the area in Peninsula Malaysia or in other places. So for Sabah, I think we need to be clear what we want Sabah to look like. Do we want Sabah to look like Kuala Lumpur, you know, with skyscrapers building? Or we want to promote Sabah as a tourism, you know, like people come to enjoy nature, to enjoy the rainforest, to enjoy the wildlife. Seriously, that's what attracted people to come to Sabah, right? We have so many islands and our corals are so beautiful, so we need to preserve this. So I just want to ask back to the Sabahan people, to the society in Sabah, from every level, what do we want Sabah to look like? How do we want to define development for Sabah? Because, you know, Sabah is like the last frontier. Even people like naturalists like Sir David Attenborough, you know, the most famous naturalist in the world, also recognize Sabah as one of the last frontier to the nature, you know. So I think right now I agree with you, Sharad, that development is still threatening our wildlife, not elephants, that are generally in wildlife, because we still want to open our forest reserve for highways, for example. Sometimes we don't need four lanes of highways. We only need a nice road that everyone can just move around easily, safely. We don't need like four lanes, because in Sabah it's not needed like in big city like Kuala Lumpur.
Farina, very quick question for you, Farina. Is the Pan-Borneo Highway going through elephant-sensitive areas?
Yes.
Okay, and on that note, I think we can have a whole other conversation just based on that and conservation corridors and how development projects may impact elephant trails. Thank you so much, Farina, for joining us on the show tonight. We really appreciate your time and also all the conservation work that you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.